It's time for Wisconsin Life. Wisconsin was the last state to overturn its ban on yellow margarine. The law was intended to shield Wisconsin citizens from the dangers of butter fakes, causing otherwise law-abiding citizens to cross state lines for the cheaper yellow margarine. Dan Perkins recalls the smuggling operations from a Spooner childhood.
Imagine this. It is 1950. Spooner, a Friday evening. Darkness is descending. My mother and a few of her friends are sitting around the kitchen table talking quietly. One woman says, "Who will drive?" Another says, "Not me. I drove last week." A third chimes in, "I'll go this time, but I want gas money before I leave." We children would be playing around the house, but when we entered the kitchen, the conversation would stop or change to a different subject. We could tell something special was happening. Only later did we learn that they weren't talking about rum running or dope peddling. Rather, they were working out the details of the weekly run across the border to Pine City, Minnesota, to avoid the state tax and purchase uncolored oleomargarine. That we lived across the street from a state senator made the planning more exciting. For many years, Wisconsin taxed uncolored oleo, and that law was not changed until 1967. I guess the legislators thought people would confuse colored oleo with butter. One state law required restaurants and hotels serving oleo to post signs to that effect. But in 1950, uncolored oleo was available and at a good price in Minnesota. So to avoid the added tax, people from a number of Wisconsin communities made runs to Minnesota to purchase cases of the illegal spread. These oleo runs were against the law, and the runner might be caught by the police. No one ever said how the police might know if someone had uncolored oleo in their car, but just knowing their actions were illegal was cause for caution. But the runner went, often alone and on back roads. The driver's return, with a trunk full of uncolored oleo, always took place after we were in bed. There was no overt discussion of the smuggling, but there was always a rush to move the product. So often, we kids became part of the process. Uncolored oleo was packaged in a clear plastic bag that contained a small bubble, which, when broken, allowed a dye into the package. We would massage the package to make the oleo a pinkish color. Now, having some color, if seen by someone, it would not stand out as the uncolored, untaxed version. Still cautious, my mother would then say, "Take this bag over to Mrs. X's house and do not go past the senator's house." Or, "Put these boxes in the basement until Mr. Y stops by to get them." This was rather exciting. What would happen if the senator did see us? Maybe just say hello, or, "How are your parents?" What would we do? Still, we kids could tell that even after the distribution phase, these lawbreakers did not feel safe. There were comments, softly spoken between my parents, about Mrs. So-and-so's trip to Minnesota, or about whether they should even do it again. To this day, not being fully aware of the statute of limitations on such nefarious criminal acts in this state, I suspect you will find few who will admit to their involvement. What I do know is that my family who was there, brother, sister, cousin, still smiles and laughs about our part in the Wisconsin oleo caper.
Dan Perkins is Professor Emeritus in the Department of Communication at UW-Eau Claire. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. For more information, visit wisconsinlife.org.
And joining us now to tell us more about the history of the Margarine Wars is Marilee Lee, director of the Hoard Historical Museum in Fort Atkinson. Marilee, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So give us the background. What circumstances set up this battle and such really stringent legislation about butter and margarine?
Certainly. And really to understand this, we need to go back a little bit and understand the history of oleomargarine. Oleomargarine was developed in about 1869 by a French scientist. And it is a combination of beef fat and other fatty acids, and it really is a man-made creation. And our dairy farmers throughout the U.S. saw it as a major concern that people could manufacture a spread that, when colored, tasted and resembled butter and had a longer shelf life and, you know, at various points was seen as healthier than butter. And it really started to undercut the dairy market, and particularly the butter manufacturing. And really throughout the late 19th century, starting about 1887, then 1889, or 1895, excuse me, there were moves to create legislation to ban either at least the use or manufacture or the coloring of margarine. Margarine, when it's not colored, really looks more like lard. It's that kind of off-white, pearly color. And it's not always appetizing, especially if you're expecting to be able to smear something that looks like butter on your bread. So by limiting the coloring of it, it was hopeful that it would help limit the sale of it. I'm the director of the Horde Historical Museum, and it's named in honor of a family, the Horde family here in Fort Atkinson, who was very influential, not only in Fort Atkinson, but really Wisconsin, in bringing dairy to Wisconsin. William Dempster Horde, who was governor of Wisconsin elected in 1888, was a major proponent of dairy. He started Horde's Dairyman and Horde's Farm, and was one of the leading voices who recommended that Wisconsin farmers switch to dairy. So when he saw this concern about oleomargarine coming onto the market, he and many others started working to try and limit it on the market, either the manufacturer or selling of it, of anything of the like. And moving forward a little bit, in 1902, there was a bill called the Grout Bill that was passed by the U.S. Congress that limited margarine being shipped and then from state to state, and then also increased the tax of it as well. So really putting a tariff on it to try and help limit it.
So clearly there was an economic concern for Wisconsin dairy farmers, milk producers, but that's not necessarily a convincing argument to make to the public. Don't buy margarine because we're afraid of losing money. So I'm sure that there were more creative ways that they tried to make margarine less appealing, besides the fact that it was against the law. But what was kind of the propaganda maybe that was going out against margarine?
Sure. Well, you know, the propaganda really then boils down to what it's manufactured from. Caul fat, which is a type of beef fat, and acids. And that alone right there would be enough as a marketing tool to not want people to use it. You're just spreading fat on your toast, where you could put butter, a wholesome, healthy butter, which comes from the cow. It's meant to be used in this form. There's a great quote from Governor Horde, who says that every mother on earth in the animal kingdom that suckles her young puts butter fat in her milk for the nourishment and digestion. Now, why is oleomargarine not as wholesome as butter fat? Separate butter fat from milk, introduce oleo fat as a substitute, and feed that to young infants. And that will not be as healthy for the young infants as just having the milk. So it really goes back to, this is a man-made substance. It's not found in nature. Do you really want to give that to your children?
So what were the penalties if an individual or, say, a restaurant or a grocery store was found to be in possession of oleo?
Sure. In 1910, a gentleman from Janesville was sentenced to 18 months in federal prison for selling oleomargarine as butter. And even still today, I believe it's still on the books that if a restaurant has to put butter on the table, they can provide margarine if the customer asks for it. But again, in a restaurant, and then also students, patients, and inmates of any state institution must have butter as well. And then if anyone violates any of that, they can be fined not less than $100, but no more than $500, or imprisoned for not more than 3 months.
We have just about 30 seconds left, but can you tell us very briefly about the infamous blind taste test in 1965 in the Senate chambers?
Yes, in 1965, like you said, the two leading parties who were trying to repeal part of the bill decided to have a taste test, and they ended up with three samples, one butter, one margarine, and then one of a low-fat dairy spread from the University of Wisconsin. And had all of the senators go through and taste all of these samples and try and figure out which was butter, which was margarine, and which was the low-fat dairy spread. And most of them did pretty well. About 32 identified the butter as butter. 28 identified the margarine as margarine. And then asked what they liked best. 21 favored the butter over the spread or the margarine.
That's just fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, Marilee, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little backstory on that amazing part of history.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Marilee Lee is the director of the Hoard Historical Museum in Fort Atkinson.